said she thoroughly enjoyed it, and appreciate Brother Bruce filling in for me, and also again Brother Dave for the morning and the afternoon service last Sunday. I'm not shaking hands today because I'm getting something. I don't think it's something that's necessarily contagious, but I never know, so I'm trying to be careful for your sakes. So my voice is kind of getting a little bit weak too. And I think I overdid it when I came back and had to unload. My boys left it all to me because they had to fly back to South Carolina. And so I had to get the tent, the stove, all the poles, up the ladder into the attic. And that was heavy. And so I had a wonderful time doing that the other day. But again, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's kind of interesting. Barak's father-in-law, his friend, Barak, Jesse, and Skyler, another friend, they had all gone hunting. They were going to do spike camping. Spike camping is where you go out, you have everything on your back, your food, your tent, your sleeping bag, everything. You hike and hunt, and then when it gets evening, you set your tent up, whether it's in the snow, whatever, and you put your sleeping bag in it, and you sleep, get up the next morning, do the same thing every day. You see no one else. Well, when I got there and I set up this nice big wall tent with a stove in it, the guy said, hey, we kind of like this. And so all the things they were bragging about what they were going to do, they didn't do. And so Barak and Skyler did it for one night and simply could not find it. The elk were there last year, all over the place. There was nothing. And so they came back to the tent too. So we really had a good time of fellowship. And of course, when you get six guys together, it's a lot of fun. So, but it's good to be back. Our verse is Psalm 71, and it's verse 17. Let's say it together. O God, thou hast taught me from my youth, and hitherto have I declared thy wondrous works. Now also, when I am old and gray-headed, O God, forsake me not, until I have showed thy strength unto this generation and thy power to everyone that is to come. All right, let's open with a word of prayer, and I'm going to ask Brother Larry Hergert if you'd pray, please. Amen. We're looking at Bible fundamentalism and the new evangelicalism. I pointed this out from our Article 2 and our Constitution, our purpose statement, and it goes down there. I've changed the color so hopefully it stands out a little bit more. Maybe you could dim the pulpit lights about halfway, Brad. Maybe that'll help. It kind of washes out. There, right there. That's good. I can still see my notes, so that's good. You see that term in there that's in yellow? Can you say that out loud, please? Okay, neo simply means new. I don't know why they do that, but that's what it is. New evangelicalism. Now, let's just have a little bit of review. Technically, are you an evangelical? Raise your hand if you have an answer for me. Carol? Yes, I am. Would you today, in public, in a religious setting with everybody, say, I'm an evangelical? Raise your hand, tell me, and then give me your reason. Brad?
I would say no.
Okay, so he says no. Now your reason? Yeah. Evangelicalism, the term is a good term. It thoroughly describes me. But it has come to mean something else to people. And so this is one of those instances where somebody has taken a word that is a good word and its meaning has changed, where I can no longer use it to identify myself. Now, I can use it in explanation with you to say, I'm an evangelical. I believe in the gospel of Jesus Christ that comes from the Greek term euangelizo, evangelical, which means a preacher of good news. Are you a preacher of good news? Absolutely, the good news of the Bible. But there have been people who have taken that term and they have changed it. So we're looking at, you'll see that it's written neo here. Up here it's new. This could say new down here as well. But I chose to use what the new evangelicals themselves use. We are neo-evangelicals is what they would call themselves. So we looked at that. We looked at the transformation of American religion. I read some information on that. Last time we ended with the history of new evangelicalism and what it is all about. This is where I'm going to pick up today. And just say this, that new evangelicalism has a fundamentalist heritage. Let me say that again. New evangelicalism has a fundamentalist heritage. Let me stop right here and just say, some of you may be, why are we even covering this? Why are we going into this? This is divisive. This is something, why do I even need to know this? The reason is because there are times when you are faced with something that someone says, like a book you're about to read. It is so good for you to know ahead of time, where does this man stand? Everybody has labels. All of us are labeled. I am self-identified as a fundamentalist and not as a new evangelical. And I am not ashamed to call myself a fundamentalist. But even now, I've got to start explaining even that term. Because people think that you're an Islamic fundamentalist, you're ready to go shoot somebody. Well, but again, there's a difference between a Bible fundamentalist and an Islamic fundamentalist. Everybody, when it comes right down to it, is a fundamentalist. You have your own fundamentals. This is what I believe, and this is where I stand, and this is the fundamental of my belief. Everybody is really a fundamentalist. Do you think that Joe Biden is a fundamentalist? He is. He's a Marxist. He's a communist. That's what he is, fundamentally. Now, he's got to cover that up, and he's got to try to hide that to pull the wool over everybody's eyes. I'm a Bible fundamentalist, and I don't try to cover that up. I want people to know I believe in the inspiration of the Bible, the Old, the New Testaments, and the death of Jesus Christ on the cross for my sins, and so forth. So when we talk about new evangelicalism, it has a fundamentalist heritage. In other words, before a certain time in history, the men who began to call themselves new evangelicals, just a few years before, would have said, I'm a fundamentalist, which tells you something. The same thing can happen today. The same transition can happen today and is happening, where people who used to call themselves fundamentalists will no longer claim that term. You know some of them. If you've been in Christianity and fundamental churches very long. Modernism, you don't hear a lot about modernism anymore. Liberalism began to take over the major denominations. Today, I can't tell you of a good Methodist church. I can't. 100 years ago, they were everywhere. Pastor, you mean there were some good Bible-preaching Methodist churches? There were. Would I agree with them on everything? No, but fundamentally, there were some good Methodist churches. Presbyterian churches, you can't find them today. I'm going to tell you a secret, and you may flip out of your seat when I tell you this. I was on staff at Bob Jones. I was single. I was looking for a place to preach on a weekly basis. And I went to what they called the extension office. The extension office was an office where the ministerial students could go and find places that needed help with ministry. So I went there. I was on staff. I worked at the information desk full time. And I went and I said, I would like to find a place where I can help with preaching on the weekends. And they looked and they said, well, there's only one church. It's right here in Greenville. And they really need help. It's the Bible Presbyterian Church. And they were very careful. They said, now, if you were a student from a Baptist background, we would not recommend it to you. But you're on staff, you can make the decision yourself. Well, I checked into Bible Presbyterian Church. How many of you have ever heard of Carl McIntyre? Raise your hand high. Two of you. Carl McIntyre was the founder of the Bible Presbyterian movement. Wonderful fundamentalist. He took a strong stand. So I went to that church and I preached for them for a year. I told them, there are some things I will not do. I will preach for you. I will not become your pastor. I am here to preach. I know that you believe in baptizing infants, not for salvation, but it was a form of dedication. And I said, but I simply won't do it because it only confuses people. So I will not do that. And I had a wonderful, I love those people. It was a tremendous time. Were there times when there were fundamental Presbyterian churches? There were. Was there a time when there were good fundamental Catholic churches? No. Actually, in about the 300s, you might have found some. That's before it became so perverted and so popish in their thinking. So, time changes, labels change, and people go along with what's taking place. But modernism and liberalism took over the major denominations, took over schools, some of the seminaries, publishing houses, modernism, liberalism. That became a tremendous controversy. You would not believe the fights. I'm not talking about physical. I'm talking about the fights where men would stand up in a meeting and they would shout at somebody who was compromising. They would shout at them. So you're a compromiser. You need to get out of here. It was a fight. This is what was happening in the 19-teens, the 1920s. This is when modernism was taking over. What were the modernists teaching? This actually started in the late 1800s. What were some of the things the modernists back in the late 1800s were starting to teach? And it really kind of stemmed from German theologians. Schleiermacher was one of them, where they were beginning to what they called higher criticism. Higher criticism is where you look down on the Bible and say, we don't know. Isaiah, written by more than one author. Isaiah was written by a number of authors. You can tell by the words that are used, blah, blah, blah. Deuteronomy, you say it was written by Moses, but there were multiple authors of Deuteronomy. And somebody compiled Deuteronomy and took pieces here, pieces there, and put this all together. This was starting in the late 1800s. Pretty soon, people were beginning to say, you know what? Science says that the world evolved because who was very prevalent in the 1800s? Darwin was. And so there's these people who were Bible believers, and they go, man, but science says this. And so they tried to take the Bible and make it fit with the science. You see my air quotes here? Science, and saying, well, that the Bible, we need to make sure that the Bible fits that, rather than you call that science. It doesn't fit the Bible. And now here we are years later, and we're saying, we all know today that evolution, how absurd. How absolutely absurd and foolish. But you got to understand, when that first came out, it's almost like all the science people are talking about today. It was science, and now here a few years later, months later, we're going, that wasn't science. That was a political agenda. And they pulled the wool over your eyes. Same thing. It happens all the time. And so you've got these controversies that were taking place, and it started creeping into churches. Pastors began to preach, here's the modernism part, that Jesus Christ was not truly the Son of God. That Jesus Christ was not truly virgin born. That the Bible is not truly inspired by God. And they would come up with terms and say, every part of the Bible that is inspired, I believe. You got to stop and think about that. What did I just say? Every part of the Bible that is inspired, I believe. Do you believe that every part of the Bible that is inspired, do you believe it?
Amen.
But wait a second. That statement is very misleading. Every part of the Bible that is inspired? All Scripture is given by inspiration. So see how the wool just can get pulled over your eyes? Somebody can say that to you and you go, oh sure, I believe every part of the Bible that is inspired. I would say stop. No. No. All of the Scripture is inspired. Don't tell me that all of the Bible that is inspired that you believe. Because it all is. So it's even in the statements that people would make, you have to be so discerning and so careful in what people say. So some of these organizations began to die out. The schools began to compromise big time. Bob Jones University was founded in 1927, somewhat in response to the modernism that was taking place. And they came up, their beginning motto was what I mentioned this morning. We believe in the old-time religion. This is back in 1927. We believe in the old-time religion and the absolute authority of the Bible. Okay? Fundamentalism did not die, however. Rather than resign themselves to defeat, fundamentalists fought back by founding their own colleges and seminaries, mission boards, and publishing houses. Although often ignored in the media, fundamentalists underwent a period of growth throughout the 1930s and 1940s. Unfortunately, the movement split in the 1950s. One faction, preferring the name New Evangelical, or sometimes simply Evangelical, sought the support of religious liberals in hopes of gaining greater public and scholarly acceptance. The other faction, keeping the name fundamentalist, maintained a strict separation from and opposition to liberalism. So you have this separation that took place. The split actually became very noticeable in the 1950s. It actually took place in 1947. And I'm going to tell you what this guy's name was. His name was Dr. Ockengay. Dr. Harold Ockengay. It's a good name for you to remember because he was the one who really was the one who spearheaded the idea of the new evangelicalism, and we will no longer call ourselves fundamentalists. And he had what we call a three-legged milking stool for new evangelicalism. Why a three-legged milking stool? Has anybody ever milked a cow on a three-legged milking stool? Paul, you have?
We mostly used a one-legged.
Why a three-legged? Just 3 points. Let me give you his three-legged milking stool. Here's what he believed, and this is what he taught, and this is what happened. They repudiated separation. He was a fundamentalist before, but he came to the, no, repudiate separation. Now, that's why I started this whole series on separation and the importance of separation. Is separation, folks of Westside Baptist Church, a Bible doctrine? It is, absolutely. It's a Bible doctrine. It is a fundamental. Okay, number two, a desire to find acceptance by the world. Now, this is summarized by somebody in a book called The New Neutralism, Ashbrook. These are the three main things that he stood for. Repudiation of separation, desire to find acceptance by the world. Here's the third thing. Determination to add the social gospel to the scriptural gospel. What is the social gospel? Somebody tell me how you would define the social gospel. What is the social gospel? And is it still alive today? Claudia? Okay, it pleases the masses. And that's true. In what way do they seek to please the masses, Paul?
Their emphasis is that they're going to reach people through social reform
Yeah. So it's reaching the masses, Claudia, via let's help people who are poor. Is there anything wrong with helping the poor? No. Let's help people dig wells because they need water. Anything wrong with that? No. I mean, a myriad of things. You could think of a thousand things. Let's, you know, have a food bank. There's nothing wrong with having a food bank. So, you know, good churches today have food banks. But there can be something wrong with it when that social gospel or that social outreach begins to overtake what we're really here for, which is the scriptural gospel. I call it the social gospel versus the saving gospel. Because I can help somebody, and I strongly believe that we as Christians ought to help people who are in need. By the way, the church first. Galatians chapter 6. You help the brethren first. The deacon fund that you give to, that is for people here at Westside Baptist Church first. Then to others outside of the church who are in need of help is where some of that money goes. So there's Dr. Ockenge's three-legged milking school for new evangelicalism. So let's define new evangelicalism. There's eight, and I'm going to define it by giving you these characteristics. See me where I got this in a publication that looks like this. So it's coming, and I'm trying to remember. Dr. David Innes wrote this, but I think he quoted somebody in this. I want to make sure I'm being fair. Let me see where he has this, and if he did this or if somebody else did this. I didn't write the page number down, so I can't find it right away. I can't find it. Eight characteristics of new evangelical thinking. Here's number one. It's by J.B. Williams. If I would just look ahead in my notes, I would find it. They emphasize love and unity to the exclusion of the truth of separation. New evangelicals emphasize love and unity to the exclusion of the truth of separation. I'm giving you time to kind of chew the cud on this. Think about that. There's nothing wrong with unity. We want unity, not at the expense of truth. You cannot have unity at the expense of truth or at the expense of purity. You can't. The only way to have unity at the expense of truth is to compromise. Say, well, for the sake of unity, we'll just say that that's something we just agree to disagree on. And see, that's how we get by. Well, that's just something we all agree to disagree on. Oh, the camel has his nose in the tent. They, number two, will not separate from religious groups on the ground of doctrinal error. You look at something like this and you go, I don't want to have to think about this. You better think about it. You better think about it. They emphasize scholarship and intellectualism. Is there anybody here who wants to be known as a dummy? No. Every one of us wants the respect of other people. So let me go back to the illustration I gave earlier. You've got Darwinism, evolution coming in. Everybody's talking about evolution. You get into the 1920s and the debate between Scopes and the Scopes trial and William Jennings Bryan took place in the 1920s on evolution. That was a huge thing. William Jennings Bryan stood for creation. His opponent, who was his opponent? Darrow stood for evolution, and they had this debate widely publicized. And who won the debate? Darrow did, according to those people. Darrell won. Why? He was coming from the standpoint of science. But, you know, evangelicals say we don't want to be looked at as a bunch of dummies. And if science is saying that evolution is true, then let's find a way to fit evolution into the Bible. And so they came up with something called, anybody? I think Bruce even taught on this one time. It is, what kind of evolution? Theistic evolution. God used evolution to create the world. See, now we can be perceived as just as intellectual as they are, but it was God using evolution. See how that works? So you compromise. Number four, they praise liberal theologians for their scholarship. You guys are so smart. You are so smart. I could never debate you. You know what? I probably couldn't. And you probably couldn't either. Because sometimes it becomes, you know, personal attacks rather than what people think. They praise liberal theologians for their scholarship. They emphasize participation in politics and in social and moral issues. Ooh, what do you think about that? Do I emphasize that we get involved politically? I actually do. I actually do. But especially during the 1970s, that participation in politics began to override what we do as a church. Let me give you an example here. A guy called me years ago, and he was starting something here in Colorado. He wanted me, our church, to be a part of this. And he said, what we are going to do is we're going to hold rallies on the Capitol grounds on important issues. He says, it is going to be many religions involved, but we're going to focus on the issues at hand. I said, so when it comes time to pray, who's going to pray? And when it comes time for getting together and you have a banquet or something, who's going to be the leader? He says, I am. I'm a fundamentalist, blah, blah, blah. I said, you know what? As long as you take a good stand, you know what? For the sake of we're agreed upon conservative politics and we can really do something good, I'm fine. But as soon as you began to introduce religion into this, I said, I'm out. Because I will not hold hands with somebody, you know, figuratively, hold hands with somebody in praying who doesn't even know how to pray, doesn't even know who to whom to pray. He says, believe me, that's not going to happen. I said, okay, I'm just letting you know. If it comes to that, I'm out. He says, I understand. Guess what happened? Well, this went on. I helped him out. I started getting other guys on board. As the regional director for the Rocky Mountain Fundamental Baptist Fellowship, I got the guys going on it, said, you know, this guy has assured me, blah, blah, blah. Their first rally, he contacted me through email, everybody, and said, we're having a rally, blah, 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 and three people are going to lead in prayer, a Muslim, a Catholic, and I. I immediately responded, said, I warned you, I'm out. And I will warn others about this. He got mad at me. I said, no, you promised me that this was going to be political and it was not going to start involving people getting involved spiritually. I am not going to bow my head when some Muslim prays to his false god. I cannot do that. That is what this is talking about. Emphasizing participation in politics and in social and moral issues to the point where we forget our religious differences, and we can, if it's a political thing, solely political. But as soon as they say, now we want this guy to pray, and this, and you know, we're going to forget doctrine. No, cannot forget doctrine. You can't do it. And it gets muddy. It gets really muddy. So that's what this is talking about on number five. They criticize the fundamentalists even more than the liberals do. New evangelicals criticize fundamentalists more than liberals do. My friends who were former fundamentalists who have gone to the neo side criticize fundamentalism more than the liberals do. It is so true. What do you say on number six? They remain strangely silent about apostasy and its evils. They are success-oriented. The end justifies the means. And that's why many churches use the music they do today. Hey, it brings the people in. But what you use to bring the people in, you have to continue to maintain to keep the people in. And this is going to mess your church up. Any questions or comments about any one of those eight? Those are the eight characteristics of new evangelical thinking. Karen? There are times, Karen, when people who have used that begin to see that it's having an opposite effect, and so they'll drop it for a little while. They'll go right back to it eventually. That's something I've noticed. Yep. So new evangelicalism was characterized by a rejection of separatism and an almost indefinable yearning for a more... Are you with me? Positive Christianity, which is exactly what we see among many of today's fundamental Baptists. You see, when you preach separation, and this is why when I started talking about separation, I said people, one of the things people don't like about separation is it's negative. I mean, do you like negative things? No, you know, it's like, let's come on, positive, we can do this. Yeah, but... No, we can't do, well, I use the word can't. Oh, sorry. Thou shalt not, oh, no. Do you know of any thou shalt nots in the Bible? That's really negative? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt. You know, the Bible talks, it has a lot of negatives. And that's why some people don't like the Bible. It's too negative. Just, if God would just be positive. Why didn't he just say, thou shalt be faithful to thy wife or to thy spouse? Why thou shalt not commit adultery? Why didn't he just say, thou shalt be faithful? Why in Deuteronomy 28 are there 15 verses of positives and 60-some verses of negatives? Here are the blessings. If you obey my word, 15 verses. If you don't obey my word, 60-some verses follow. Four times as many verses on, I will curse you here, I will curse you in this, I will curse you, I will curse you, I will curse you. New evangelicalism is a rejection of the doctrine of separation to pursue infiltration and dialogue as their working principles. In this class, here's what I want you to remember. New evangelicalism emphasizes infiltration. Fundamentalism emphasizes separation. Easy to remember. Fundamentalism, separation. New evangelicalism, infiltration. We will win them by joining them. We will win them by letting them know that we're all together in this infiltration. We will infiltrate them and we will change them when we infiltrate them. Where do you see in the Bible anything where it says, get in the middle of them, infiltrate them, and there you're going to win them? Do you know of any verses that say, wherefore come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord? Yeah, it's always come out. Now, if a church is going bad, you're already in it, and you're seeing this taking place, that's where you need to stand up and say, this is not right. But when that church has made its decision to go into compromise, what's your decision now? Leave. Get out. New evangelicalism is not a threat to false religions. It talks to them, appreciates them, and tolerates their doctrine. Now, lest you think that this is, that new evangelicals think that they accomplished what they were going to do. 1947, 1957, 67, 77, 87, 97, 2007, 2017, 70 years later, 70 some years later, what would they have to say about their whole doctrine of infiltration? Well, here's a new evangelical up here. Many of you have heard of Dr. R.C. Sproul. Tremendous theologian. He really is. Tremendous theologian as far as his thought processes. But he's a new evangelical. He wrote something years ago called Our Fundamentalist Betters. You know what he means by that? It's a compliment to fundamentalism. Basically saying, you know, we blew it. And we're right at the end, so I don't have... It's a long article that I want to read to you, and I'm going to have portions up on the screen because it's very interesting. He points out to you today, well, when this was written, this is way back in 2006, but he points out, he passed away in 2017, he points out why we blew it as new evangelicals and why the fundamentalists were better and what they did was right. And so I'm going to read that to you, Lord willing, next week. Comments or questions as we close? Carol. Yes. Marxism, what she is talking about in the 1920s, was huge. I mean, what had just happened in Russia in 1917? I mean, you've got the Russian Revolution, and people are going, oh, wow. And everybody's interested in the workers and workers' rights and so forth. And the Marxism used class warfare to try to accomplish their agenda, to try to get the two classes fighting each other. In the United States, it didn't work. But you know what they're now using as warfare? Race. And so that's why critical race theory is Marxist at its roots, and it is now the communists say, well, we didn't win with the class warfare, we will try to win with race warfare. And to a certain extent, they have succeeded. BLM is Marxist. Antifa is Marxist, fascist, what they say they're against, they're actually, that's what they are. And they will often accuse you of what they are more guilty of. It's called projection. They project onto you what they themselves are guilty of. More so, to take the attention off of what they're doing. And you would say, well, they would never do it. They're accusing me of that, so they can't be guilty of that. Folks, this is where politics is such a good illustration of what's taking place. That's a wonderful point. Somebody else? Paul?
Because of what greed is, I've been here for over 40 and everything, but I didn't...
That's like Peter paid the piper with a with the piper and all that stuff. Blood bought, yeah.
I will believe you. There's the difference between most Baptist churches.
Yeah. It is, you know, it is not enough for you to call yourself a Baptist anymore. It's not enough to call yourself a Christian. I am a Christian. But people say, I hate denominationalism. It's breaking us apart. No, I believe in denominationalism because it continually separates the wheat from the chaff. And I hate the fact that you can't just say, I am a Christian, and people know immediately, you know, this is what he stands for. And now you've got to go down the line. I'm a Christian, but I'm a Baptist. I'm a fundamental Baptist. I'm a Bible-believing fundamental Baptist. You've got to use all these terms to try to identify who you are. And by saying what he says, you know, it's quite the alliteration that you'd have to remember. But it's true. Karen? Speak a little louder, please. Yeah.
Yeah.
Knowing right doctrine is good, but you have to go further. You've got to practice it, and you also have to inform yourself about bad doctrine. You have to. Because bad, does Satan ever come to you and say, I'm Satan, and I'm coming at you? No, the bad never comes at you revealing itself. The wolf never comes to you and says, ah, I'm a wolf. He comes to you as in sheep's clothing. Folks, that's what we always forget. You can preach what is right, you can preach good doctrine, but you also have to warn people about bad doctrine. The whole point of this Sunday school series, I'm trying to teach you the new evangelicalism, what they're saying and what they're doing. It's been going on for more than 70 years. All right.